to do radio. And you don't need to look good, you don't need to, or undress for the camera, like we used to do in the 90s. I hate the production. Conversations with people around the world. The internet is a dumpster fire. Everything is... I'm the artist D, and these are my conversations. I just wanted to have with people. Or the people in the basement. Hello, Ada Selena. This is the artist D.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. How are you? How have you been?
Well,
that's a deep subject. It's been a lot of years.
Yes,
for us.
It's been like six years?
Exactly 5 years. I checked. Our last recording was 5 years ago.
Wow. Yeah, that was a momentous time.
It was, because at the time, I mean, we had just practically met, and I thought, I didn't really know what was going on, so I just interviewed you as this fabulous artist that you are.
Yes.
And you were actually the last guest on the Fabulous D Show, technically.
No kidding.
Yeah. And then I stopped myself, because I think we were both searching and seeking. And neither of us knew that at the time.
Uh-huh.
But you were embarking on a journey. I now know.
Yes.
Want to tell us a little bit about what you've been up to these last 5 years?
Yes. That's exactly what happened 5 years ago, was I embarked on a journey. And I sort of knew that's what was going on, but it was, you know, very much the beginning, and big changes were happening. I had moved away from Southern California, which is where I was born and raised for my whole life, so that was a big deal for me, and a lot of projects had been completed, but they were also coming to an ending. Instead of, you know, sometimes you complete stuff and then there's more. This was like, well, I completed this stuff, which was great, but then it was like, and now you're done. Now you're, this is over. You don't get to continue this thing. That was it, you know? Yes. And that's hard to let go of these things that you get very attached to and put a lot of energy into and don't know, you know, like how you're going to move forward. So that was kind of the context for where I was at when we last talked. I had just kind of committed finally to using my name, Ada Selena, and being a solo artist with that name and putting out my work that way, which, you know, is the obvious thing to do and everybody had been telling me to do for many, many years, but I had some serious personal reasons for not doing that, which is what really got confronted totally exactly 5 years ago.
It's crazy. You were an artist for, you know, forever. I mean, like, this is your life.
Yes.
And then it's kind of, it just stopped.
Yes. Yes. Everything, it was like this gigantic transformation and this like claiming of identity in a way that I hadn't done before. It was like the achievement I had achieved all these things that I was doing. And, you know, you think that's going to mean, okay, I've hit that mark. Now we get to launch. Mm-hmm. And instead it was, I hit that mark and now I get to fall off this cliff.
And that was more so health issues that had happened?
That was absolutely 100% health issues. Yeah, that was kind of, you know, I've always had some disabilities and physical chronic health problems, but I was also younger and I had, you know, grown accustomed to not sharing publicly that I had these conditions for a lot of different reasons. And so I had grown very accustomed to, you know, passing as abled, essentially. And I passed very well.
Yes, you did.
So, people had a very difficult time believing. I even had a difficult time believing, and I'm the one in total pain and can't move half the time, and it still was very unreal to me that I was finally becoming so incapacitated. I mean, doctors warned me it was going to happen. You know, it's not like, but I just couldn't, process it. I was in a lot of denial around what my limitations were and, what I could pull off or what I needed, how I needed to be. And part of it is, you know, I grew up in Los Angeles. I grew up with a lot of Hollywood people, very famous people from a young age. My whole conditioning was really skewed to a much different reality. Whereas I think, you know, a lot of people come to LA from other places to do their career. I think for those of us born in Los Angeles, at least me, we don't understand reality. We've lived in this bubble, this Emerald City. My mom calls it the Emerald City, so you know, and we've had our green glasses on the whole time. And it's really intense. Like part it of this is. Therapy was getting out of that bubble and getting a very different perspective on everything.
You kind of have it on all sides, because not only did you have that LA mentality, but you're a strong-willed woman and an artist, and this is a perfect example of how, like, the brain is, it's on autopilot, it's doing its thing, and you're like, I can do this. Yeah. But then you realize, oh, I'm in this suitcase, this meat suitcase, and it's not cooperating with the brain whatsoever. So you had a lot of chronic pain, and did you want to tell us a little bit about what exactly it is?
Sure. Yeah. I have fibromyalgia.
Oh, okay.
Which is, you know, kind of a weird condition, and it varies. It's different for a lot of people. And I wasn't really convinced that's what I had for a long time, but, the more research I did and the more my condition worsened, the more it became impossible to say it's not what I have. And isn't that the thing so often, the thing you're most in denial of, the thing you're most like, no, that's not me. You're like, oh, no, that's definitely me. That's me. You know, I'm in pain all the time. Okay. And yet I've somehow had this strong will, as you put it. And boy, I was able to block out a lot. I was able to block out.
Yeah, I've come up against that myself. I don't know if, you know, what I have myself, but I just have very bad back and alignment, and I've had to take better care of myself to get through, to realize that, you know, if I do certain things, oh, I can't move, or oh, what's that excruciating, sharp, stabbing pain? Oh. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Suddenly your body just, it's done with you.
I know there's that threshold where you get away with it to some degree and you get away with it. And I knew this. I remember being in my 20s and, you know, I would have these episodes and I was just able to hide them. You know, my family, you know, knew, would be aware to some degree that I was having these experiences. But for the most part, I was able to hide, you know, my severe episodes. And I remember times where my back would just be completely seized up and my neck seized up and I wouldn't be able to move. And that's kind of how it would really flare up. You know, I would go and go and go. And then all of a sudden I'm, you know, paralyzed for several days. And I thought to myself, I wonder how long I can keep going like this before it becomes a real problem. And also, I think I'm going to pay for this, like, down, right. You know? And then my younger self is a total asshole. And like, yeah, but I'll be old then, so I'm just going to live now. And I did, you know? And there's some truth to that. You know, we have a limited window of time, and I was where I was at, and, you know, there's way more knowledge and awareness support for chronic illness now. Wow. I mean, back then, this was the 90s. Nobody had a clue. Right. There was no name for my condition. There was no support. It's not like I didn't try to get help and to deal with it, but I didn't succeed. I didn't get help. And so I just had to live with it. And you get stuck in that. You get, okay, I have to live with this. So you just keep going. And then 10 years later, you're like, I can't live with this anymore, you know?
Thankfully, we're kind of entering into that period where in more of these invisible illnesses
Yeah.
Or unbelievable illnesses, you know, or wow, you're so strong. Why should you have that?
Right.
We're kind of acknowledging that finally. A lot
That's
of
amazing.
The depression and this mysterious pain that is really undiagnosable sometimes.
Absolutely.
Which is wonderful, but it is amazing that we're burdened with all of this. And it kind of showed me your levels of different levels of authenticity, because you know, when I met you, you're authentic, you're an artist, you're being yourself, you're out there. But then it's like, oh, this whole, over the last 5 years, it's like a whole other side of you.
Yeah, that was the secret side.
Kind of has helped, though. I mean, seeing some of your recovery, you're kind of coming out of your shell again now and getting control of it in some ways. And has that authenticity and sharing more of yourself helped you to come to a different level and present something different to us?
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's really kind of, that's it right there, is that I had to do something I didn't want to do, because there was just literally no choice. It was either become who I am and do that for real, or don't do anything. You know, there was no ability to kind of put on this show or try to present what I thought I was comfortable with, or what other people were comfortable with, or just what I thought was fun. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I come from a lot of trauma and pain. And while I express that through my work and always have, I don't like it. Like, I want to have fun. I just wanted to have some fun. You know, I just wanted to be a musician and get on stage and put on a fun show and express myself in the way that I enjoyed. And, you know, I wanted to do something else. I didn't want to do me. I've done me. I'm always me. You know, I wanted to, you know, become a character and kind of do myself through this proxy. Cause I was totally avoiding, and I was very split. I was definitely, you know, completely, people don't really understand split personality. You know, there's a lot of, like, the way that gets presented in media or people talk about it, I think, has given the wrong impression. But no, you can have a real split where you really lose, you are not consciously connected to part of yourself, and you lose time and you lose memories. And I had that. That's and true. Through this process, I absolutely have healed from that. I have full command of myself all the time. I'm not split anymore. And that, you know, required me to just kind of trust in a vulnerability that was insane. Mm-hmm. Like, really, I don't recommend it. It was just something like, I, you know, I had a lot of safety and fear issues and want to be protected of myself. And I'm sharing very personal things on the internet, and I'm engaging in this conversation. And 5 years ago, I don't think it was quite as a free for all as it is now, you know, like, and now everybody's saying whatever they want all the time. And that's, you know, interesting. But even 5 years ago, it was not quite as, you know, things were different out there. And I was definitely taking this kind of leap of faith, and a lot of people thought it was really strange, you know, that I was sharing the way I was sharing or engaging the way I was engaging. And I kind of didn't know exactly why I was doing this, but I just had these very strong instincts. And also, I was, you know, where I was at, and people weren't getting it. You know, people saw me as this other person that I was, and the pressure to live up to their expectations was really painful at that time, because I was having to let it all go and not be this rising star or be whatever they think I am. I don't know. And so I did feel like I can't just tell people, I have to show them, like, they have to really get this. And so I, you know, really took years to learn how to show my state and to really open up and communicate. And it was not pleasant. I mean, I was triggered constantly. I had, you know, interactions with people that I don't know, you know, there was a lot of unpleasant emotions involved. I was angry and I was like frustrated and but people also responded in really amazing ways, and they got involved in the conversation and they let me say what I needed to say, even if I was being kind of mean to them. But, you know, it was like, well, this is how your words are affecting me. Like, take it personally or not. It's not really about you. But you know, like, we have to try to figure out how to understand what people are experiencing and not always taking it personally, even though I was taking it personally too. I mean, it's a trippy experience.
And it's an extreme. I mean, your changing is an extreme change for yourself. And then for everybody else who is watching you, it's an extreme change. And then what you're presenting is kind of extreme. So everybody's like, I don't know what to do. And I think that's where we were last time. Was my main question in my head was for myself, like, what's it all about? Why, what is it worth it? All of this stuff that we do. And I couldn't find the answer, but it's kind of the same progression, is that you just kind of have to shed who you were, that character.
Yeah.
And become who you really are, which is, it is painful and extreme. And it's like, well, this isn't any fun. But before, it was kind of killing me. So what are you going to do? You just got to do. And you'll find that new audience. So you found those who have, you know, gone away. I'm sure you've lost many. We all seem to. But those who you've gained really appreciate who you now are. And I think now our world is needing that, and people are starting to, like you said, share a lot, like just anything on the internet now again, from a time where we were a little bit more reserved. But you're sharing everything and people are really connecting with that.
Yes. Yeah, I think that thankfully for me, it's a small audience at this time, which is really all I've been comfortable with. You know, and I'm thankful that it was a small community while I was going through, especially the last couple years, which were really kind of the hardest. And I was sharing kind of the most intimately, and it was really kind of chaotic and haphazard. And I'm happy that I'm through that. And while I continue to share authentically, I feel like I get to share more as like a completed, you know, journey, where I'm a more of a whole person telling the story and sharing what I'm comfortable with. Whereas before, it was like just this bleeding out of myself. And I've deleted most of it. You know, I delete all my profiles with the few exceptions, and the ones that didn't get deleted, I removed a lot of content. I was like, I'm not letting Facebook, you know, monetize my blood, you know, like I needed a clean slate. I almost left the internet altogether.
We should write that down. Facebook monetizing your blood. That should go into something.
Should I write a song?
Yes. It needs to be a song.
Zuckerberg.
Yeah, because you removed yourself almost completely, and there was at least on our side, what seemed to be you were stepping back completely, and you were like, I'm going in a couple weeks, and you know, you're done. And then you were done. How did that feel when you had deleted pretty much everything and you tried to like stop it? How was that time?
Amazing. Oh, it was fantastic. It was so beautiful. I mean, it was about a month to 2 months, not of absolute social media, like nothing at all, but very little, and with pages in process of deletion. And, you know, I definitely cut the cord, and I was fully committed to that. I did not get online. I spent, you know, my days, I don't even know what I did, but I remember feeling great.
Wow.
Yeah, it's all great. It has totally changed. Like before I did that, where I was at and where I'm at now, it's been like a light year progression in terms of my physical health, my mental health, my creativity. Like it was necessary. And I basically got off all the social media. I only posted what I was feeling on my blog and on Patreon. And I wrote a few things, you know, that I was inspired to write about my life. And that was it. But then what happened was, is that we've decided to move to New Mexico.
Very exciting.
And Yes, I'm very excited. And that's what paused the total deletion, was I suddenly realized that I was going to be leaving the state possibly as soon as this month, although luckily it was all dependent on our landlord. And so we've since found out that it's okay. We can wait till the spring to move, which is better. But we didn't know. We thought we might be leaving in a month. You know, it was really very up in the air, and I thought, okay, I need to think this through and say, you know, I'm m moving, things are up in the air, and if I just totally disconnect from that avenue of communication, then maybe that's not the wisest thing to do. So I said, okay, well, I'm just going to keep these profiles that are new. You know, I had a new Facebook profile that, you know, where I d had deleted my one from 10 years ago or whatever, and so that was already gone. And I deleted my Instagram. I had a new Twitter profile also. So everything's been created within the last year. And then I did keep my Facebook page, my artist page, just because it seemed like more trouble than it was worth to delete that and possibly start a new one. And so I just deleted a bunch of pictures and content that I didn't want up there forever. And that was really refreshing. And so now I've come back to all of this in a month. I don't feel obligated. That's what it was. I don't feel like I'm married to this. If I decide tomorrow to delete everything, I know I can. I feel like it's really, I proved that it's a choice, that I'm choosing to use these tools and that it's not, it's bigger than me. You know, this is the world now. And if I don't interact with Facebook because of ethical reasons, then I'm also losing out in the benefit that I get that I deserve, essentially. And so I feel like, while I support boycotting and awareness, I also think that's kind of a shitty situation to put people in and say,
It
well,
is.
the, you know, if you want to behave in an ethical way and take a stand, you have to cut your face off and
And
just
not talk to
live
anybody.
with it, you know? And I'm like, you know, yeah, no, I'm gonna have to think about this some more, you know? Like, I think that we have to think about all of this some more. We're in an interesting situation,
We are.
and there is no like single-minded do this. It's the, you know, there's no single ideological, everybody does this one thing this way and that's going to solve everything. You know, that's the issue now across the board, you know.
That does give me a different perspective, because I have the same turmoil with especially Facebook, because I really don't like it, and every time I go on it, I'm not pleased. But yet at the same time, if I removed it, I feel like I'd lose all of these connections to people that only use it. And that's a really good point, is why delete this and boycott it if it really is keeping us in touch? And we have
Right.
to work with transitioning it to whatever it needs to be. Did you find that people couldn't find you? Were they missing you when you were like gone? Did they call you? Anybody keep in touch, or did they just completely ignore you?
Well, I had people sign up for my newsletter, and I had people join me on Patreon, which was kind of the big thing. I was really tired of, again, like creating all this content and like sharing deeply of myself for these other platforms to benefit. And I was like really getting, I couldn't take that anymore emotionally. It was really draining. And so I said, you know, if people really want to see me, I need to feel supported. I need to feel like the energy that I'm expending is not being leveraged by somebody else to benefit them, and I'm getting nothing. You know, so Patreon really helped heal that. And I love that you messaged me for this interview through Patreon. And it was so, it's so, everything that happens there, it's been really slow, but using that platform has been one of the most positive internet media experiences I've had at carte blanche in the last 7 years. And you know, this goes into dealing with pledge music and the whole crap that they put me through and everybody else through. And just, you know, that really pissed me off. That was part of the final straw, was pledge just infuriated me. I just was so pissed off about that because it was just symbolic of all the shit that we are put through as artists. And I was like, no, I get it that in the music world, it's like very much a thing where everybody just rolls with it. And like, that's the industry and we're all used to being fucked over and we just are cool. And I was like, no, I'm not cool. Okay. I'm not okay with this. I am disabled. I am ill. I am not rolling with anything and I'm not rolling with this. And I was like, that's it. I'm done.
And it's so true that that's the culture of an artist is like, well, I'm an artist and yeah, we get fucked over. That's what happens. Yeah. So let's just take this.
I don't have any more takes to take. No.
You are all out of fucks for sure.
I am. Yeah.
Well, I'm falling in love with Patreon and I'm wanting to get more on there myself because I have always felt, you know, from the beginning of when the internet started to not be the internet of 1999 and all these people started coming in, it was like this feeling of not only giving it away, but it being, I guess, fucked over basically from everybody. And you just give and give and you get, you know, 6 likes and that's all you got. And, and you don't know who's out there. You don't know who's appreciating it. And I love that some of my friends became patrons of you.
It's so cool.
From what I can tell. And they're like talking about you. I'm like, oh my God, that's so cool. It's like connecting people again.
It is. Well, and that's what I wanted to feel even more so was that sense of like what you're talking about of just, well, some people like and interact and I know there's people out there, but I needed a sense of that tighter community of like, but who's really interested in this, you know, is this even something? And where I started on Patreon 8 months ago and where I am now is dramatically different. It's really proving itself to be, while it certainly works very excellently as a crowdsourcing type of experience, and the contributions have been really helpful to moving forward, it's also been a personal growth and creative tool part of the project that I didn't really understand could work. Whereas like with Kickstarter and Pledge, you know, you have this fully formed project that you're like, I know what I'm doing and this is what I'm selling and we're launching and it's intense and it's a lot and you really have to have a lot going on to do it. And I've done it before. But coming from this state where I'm at now with my disability, my whole process is really different and it's hard to launch that kind of project because I don't have that kind of clarity or actionable timeline in that way. And because I come from that, I've been a professional artist. I've done countless actionable timelines, you know, with, you know, delivering product to people and getting paid. And I'm very wired towards that. So I'm very wired towards like, I make a commitment, I have to follow through. This is like a real thing. And so Patreon for me has been really allowing me to come step out of that and say, it's just really okay to just work your process and not know exactly where you're at and not be on the clock and still be valuable and still feel like I'm offering something of value and that it is developing and progressing. And this is the real behind the scenes progress. This is not the Pledge version or the Kickstarter version that's a little more curated and like maybe it is for some people, but for me, this is the pure raw we're in it, you know. So
that's what I love. And I love that type of artist. That's what I've always been, is like, I don't want to make an album or a movie. I just want to make stuff and as I go. And that just speaks to me. And I love that that's kind of gotten some other artists to do the same. Cause I love your Hollywood House videos and that's, and they're like, you know, epic 20 minutes or so. So it's something, it's an enjoyable, entertaining moment with you. And that's cool. And your dog, which is awesome.
Exactly. Well, you know, like one of my earliest influences, like so many, I'm sure, was The Wizard of Oz, which of course I've got my Emerald City, LA metaphor. And as a kid, I had the record, you know, so I had the Wizard of Oz record of the movie. And so I would listen to the record and, you know, play along and sing all the songs. And I would walk around, like I was like 3 years old, and I'd walk around the border of this giant rug we had in the living room. That was my little yellow brick road. And I had a little wooden dog on wheels that I called Toto. And I would pull my little dog around the carpet and listen to this record. And honestly, I feel like my whole life is just a repetition of that. I'm always having like these, I have this carpet in my studio that I bought in LA back in 2004. That's been with me the whole time, is my magic carpet. Everywhere I've gone, I've carpet, and I just set up my location on this carpet, no matter whether it's a tent or a garage or wherever I am. And I got my little dog, and you know, I'm kind of trying to, you know, figure out where I'm going and how I'm going to get home. So
it's perfect, and you're probably that is your whole life. We speak to our child inside so much, and it's more than the standard, typical, psychological, you know, the inner child kind of thing that I'm kind of learning these days. It's like, you got to really speak to it. Like, I'm taking care of you. This is what, you know, I'm here for you. We're going to get through the Oz maze together.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm obsessed with Return to Oz. Have you ever seen that movie?
You know, yes, I have.
That uh-huh. was my, it wasn't really my childhood because it was after that, but I saw it probably as a teenager or something. And it spoke to me more than The Wizard of Oz because Dorothy goes back and it's all a shit show. And right. Everything is trashed. And that's me. I've returned and the Emerald City is broke down and the bricks are everywhere.
Right.
And I'm like, well, now what are we going to do?
Yeah.
So she befriends all of these freaks and weirdos and artists and
totally
everything's cool then, you know, she gets through it. That's my, right. my thing. And speaking of becoming extreme, because you've definitely voiced your opinion of where you stand.
Yes.
And I'm right there with you these days, but you definitely, one of your key points is, you know, overcoming this patriarchy and craziness that has always been in place in this country.
Mm-hmm.
How do we get through this? What are your thoughts on that?
It's a very, very good question.
I know we've only got like 30 more minutes, but...
I'm going to sum it all up for you.
Please.
Yeah. Okay. Absolutely. Well, I'm just going to start with a little reflection on where I'm at in terms of relationship to the bigger picture, which I'm in a really good mental place for the most part right now, which is a real special little bubble for me because mostly I'm not happy. And I'm extremely affected and pained and traumatized by things that are happening. But I also have this one life to live, and I need to feel some joy and appreciate the blessing that I have right now of having a window of comfort where things are relatively okay and nothing bad is happening to me directly right now. And even though there are things that are worrying and problematic right now, they're kind of leaving me alone. Mm-hmm. And maybe they'll come back around later, but I'm really accepting this little space of feeling good and feeling like I'm on the right track and where I'm at, and that doing for myself and helping getting myself in a better place is also the only thing I can really do that is helpful to the bigger picture as well. And I've long had that idea that, you know, while I need to feel a strong responsibility to the greater narrative and other people and all living things and this experience. I also have to say, you know, that I'm one person and I'm only capable of so much, and I'm not, you know, a together person. I don't have a lot of resources. I have a lot of undealt with trauma. I have limits, you know, I have severe limits. And I would love to save the world, you know, I would love to be that person that is just like Martin Luther King, you know, like he, his portrait hung in the counselor's office of my junior high school, which was a really rough time for me. And I was definitely suicidal. And although I was masking that pretty well, they almost put me on suicide watch, but I'm very good at talking people out of things.
As with all things, it's well masked. Yes.
So it was, yeah, they, you know, if people caught on, I was usually able to talk them out of really noticing how severe my problems were, which was not a good thing, but I was very split. And so part of the split part of me would take control and, you know, run with the narrative. And, you know, maybe that's just the way it had to be. I don't know. But Martin Luther King Jr.'s portrait hung in the counselor's office, and I was in that office a lot. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, would just see that picture every day and think about him and what he stood for. And it was a bit, it was a real, real beacon. And I think about, I can see that room and I can see that portrait on the wall, and I can imagine, what if that portrait wasn't there? Where would I be today? You know? And I think, I don't know, but it makes a difference, you know, and being a photographer, it plays into a lot of themes for my life in terms of social justice activism and the role media plays in our lives.
Every little bit counts then.
Yes, it does. It does. You know, just the fact that that school had that picture, they didn't have to hang that picture up there, right. You know, but people fought for that. People fought, and it's, nothing's perfect, and nothing is, no hero is perfect, but those things do make a difference, and they made a difference to me. And I was very aware of that. And so I always had that sense of wanting to be somebody like him that made a difference to somebody. And that was the goal from doing music, because I had very bad stage fright. I didn't really want to do it on a certain level. It seemed like a big problem, that it'd be much easier if I could just, you know, have a decent living and make my life and not do music. But there was this really strong sense that I needed to tell my story and make music for the other people that were like me, because at the time it really seemed like I was super weird and that my problem really unique, because nobody else would talk about it. I was constantly being shut down and I didn't understand why. And this all feeds into patriarchy. I'm getting there. Oh. And, and so I thought I was really unique and that my problems were insane and that nobody understood me, which didn't seem like that was likely, because of course all the teachings are saying that, no, if you understand yourself, you'll understand that everybody is like you. Right. And I'm like, well, how can everybody be like me when everybody's acting like I'm totally weird, right. You know,
yeah.
Like I'm not making this up, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I realized, oh, because everybody else is split. Also, everybody else is just like me. They're all split and they're all in denial to some degree. Not everybody quite so clinically to the level that I was, certainly,
right.
You know, all the way. But me, I suddenly realized, like I, like you say, I am the extreme version. I'm the version you can see. I'm very easily mappable because of how extreme my story is. The contrast is there. You know, that's how we experience. That's how we understand things, is through these contrasts. Well, I'm very contrasted. You know, you can see it. And other people, everybody else is doing exactly the same thing. It's just less obvious. It's less clear. It's not quite as extreme. They haven't gone as far down these different roads. It's just the normalized version. And that's, the normalized version was always telling the extreme version, me, to get in line,
right.
To stop whining about your problems, sister. Nobody fucking cares. Like, buy a car, get a house, have some
food. Right. White picket fence.
Oh, right. I want to have babies and torture them like I was tortured.
Absolutely.
Oh, so I went down this long journey of examination and understanding who I am and what the world is. And in a nutshell, it's absolutely patriarchy. And understanding what patriarchy really represents, what that word represents, which a lot of people, you know, it's very easy to just like get a one sentence definition and call it a day. I know what that is. It's patriarchy. Men run things. It's no, that's like an extremely, it's a whole universe of understanding the conditioning, the history, the identities involved. And it's everything, as you know, it's everything, every gender and sexual identity that we're dealing with. It's relationship with all kinds of bigotry. You know, it's relationship with sexism, it's relationship with racism, it's relationship with the concept of ownership. It's our money. I mean, it's everything, our religion.
Which is what overwhelms everybody. Because they're like, well, damn, it's everything. It's like air.
It is. It's like air. It's the air we breathe. And that's, you know, that's the beginning right there. When you get that realization, you're just going to have to sit with that one for a while. And you're just going to have to accept it. You know, that's really, and also my definition of acceptance from like a spiritual practice or a Dharma practice is, in my opinion, is the definition of acceptance, but I can't claim that. I'm just saying it is my way of understanding it. I think it is an accurate way of understanding it because in English, we use these words to describe these ideas, and acceptance is a word that's used in meditating a lot. And accepting has a definition, you know, a set of definitions in the Webster's dictionary you can look up, but it doesn't mean you really understand what that word is being used to describe in that context. And then things get taken out of context and people start manipulating them and using them as a tool for patriarchy. And it's annoying. And healing and religion has been absolutely co-opted and used as a tool for patriarchy. And now we have our king of gaslighters in the White House. I've been talking about all this time. I mean, this guy is it. This is what I've been trying to tell people.
This is the guy, yes.
The guy right here. And he and my father have the same fucking birthday.
Oh, wow.
People are the same. My father... King of gaslighters, absolutely king of fucking gaslighters. Took my whole life to really understand him. He has absolutely been, you know, my work. And thankfully, I will likely never, ever, ever have any contact with him in any way, shape, or form ever again. And that's what's really giving me a sense of freedom. But definitely I've got his fucking doppelganger in the White House.
Right. Over here.
Clown version. He's very different. You know, technical details are different, but and you know, there are things that my father gravitated towards that ultimately have served me very well. My father had much better taste. Let's put it that way. I would tell him that. He had good taste.
That's what's in the White House is the scrubbed down version. They remove the taste, they remove the culture. That's the core of all the beings that we are railing against. But most of them, thankfully, had some taste and tact and couth.
I have to admit that as much as I hate to give my father credit for anything, because I had this whole manipulation that acceptance is forgiveness and that forgiveness is something. And I have really broken that one down. And it's like, no, acceptance is not forgiveness. Acceptance is not acquiescing. Acceptance is not saying any of it's okay in that way. Acceptance is simply accepting that this is what we're in, not fighting it, not reacting to it, not loving it, not hating it, none of it, not reacting to it in any way, shape, or form of any kind, not passing any judgment, just accepting that this is the absolute truth of what we're in. And it's not saying you can't have judgment. It's not saying you have to give up any of these things. It's not saying that. It's just saying that part of how you have to learn to move forward in this is have that experience of acceptance. You have to sit with it for a bit. If you haven't had that before, if you are coming from being unaware of this condition, and then you have an enlightenment experience where you go, oh shit, I am aware of this condition, that is very disturbing. Hmm. And some people die over it. It's a big deal. You know, it is not, it's violent, it's intense, it's life-changing, it's a big deal. So it's so important that you learn how to find a place within that where you're not just reacting. That's where you get these savior complexes, that's where you get suicides, you know, it's all a reaction to these traumatic things and trying to control it one way or the other. And you try to control it by being a good person, or you try to control it by being a self-destructive person, or you try to control it by being a destructive outside, you know, an aggressive person, or you're trying to find somebody else to take responsibility for it, you know. And it's not that there's no truth to any of that. It's not that those qualities aren't part of who we are as people or don't have their relevance at certain times. However, if you are taken over by any one of them, it's basically a possession, and your attempt to take control has really controlled you, and you're now essentially possessed by the spirit of whatever you're obsessing with. And it's, you know, the train's left a station and it's off and running, and it's probably not discerning reality very accurately. And even if you're doing good things for the right reason, if you are in ignorance, you're going to inherently cause problems. It's just the laws of the universe. It's just the way it is.
So much truth and in that. Yes.
So I don't like it. Like, I'm just, I'm not saying, like, when I tell my story, I'm like, look, if I could make up a story on reality that was different and say, this is how it is, I would do that, because how it is sucks on this. I mean, like, it's also amazing. I wanted to make up a story and have reality be whatever I said it was. You know, they said I was a creator. I create my world. Well, I want to create my fucking world then. And I want to create a different world. You know, I was sincere. But there, you know, there's apparently the way things work. And so I think that, yeah, go ahead.
I'm hearing sit with it and find your balance.
Yeah.
And don't let any one certain thing get you down. And because I certainly understand that. I mean, we both hang out on Twitter a lot. It's just sometimes a black hole of this dumb culture that we're looking at. And I think the problem that I have is, like, when I get overwhelmed with the people who never will understand, and then it feels like a total losing battle when I see, like, just going out in the world and seeing the bumper stickers and the gigantic, massive flags hanging off some pickup trucks, and these people at, you know, these events, they're just so in love with their dumb culture that they're never going to come out of it.
Right, because they're creating a reality that is comfortable for them, rather than dealing with the truth of the reality, which is what we're talking about, which is uncomfortable. And that's where compassion comes from. That's where you have compassion for evil, essentially, because you understand that these people who are absolutely practicing evil are still, unfortunately, totally driven by this fundamental human desire and need to protect. It's self-protecting, you know, which is a really strong instinct to create an artificial reality that they can live in that works for them. And it's not about other people. And they, you know, essentially other people then have to live in the wake of that problem. And so what we're talking about is saying, how do you live, how do you protect yourself? How do you create a space that is safe for you as the individual to live in psychologically, emotionally, and live in reality at the same time.
Right.
That's the trick. That's the razor's edge, man. Yeah. I mean, that's what we're talking about. And that's
exactly,
that's every day. That's every moment where you have an opportunity to come back to that. Mm-hmm. Not going to be in it all the time. You're yeah. going to be stabilized. You're going to have emotional experiences, and it's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. The idea is that when you're having that emotional experience, when that shit is getting you down, you are aware that you can circle back around to that place of acceptance. You just say, it's infuriating me. I am furious. Be furious. Fuck yeah. Be furious. Be honest. But then come back around and let yourself come back to that center and let it go. That's all these practices are teaching you how to do. That's sitting, that's Tai Chi, that's breathing. That's all that's teaching you how to do, is to get lost in your emotion and your sensory reality and come back from it and bring yourself back. That's all that is. It's preparing you for death.
That's why I get so angry at the suicides, because I wish people understood that just being here, just being what we are, it makes such a difference. And just like that poster on the wall, I mean, that's all it takes sometimes, is just a poster on the wall. And that's what some people can be, is a poster on the wall.
It's true.
And that changes.
It's funny you say so that, because that's where I've been blocked. I've made a poster as one of my patron rewards, and I owe some people. And I haven't been able to make a poster. I have to. It's one of my jobs to make a poster. And now I think that we've delved into.
I think you have to now do that. Yes.
I think I have to make this poster.
You can. You're literally going to be a poster on the wall. So come on.
Yeah. Right. And you know, to kind of wrap it up is while it's that duality where, while I greatly admired these people and wanted to do the type of good that they did in the world, I was terrified of that. Mm-hmm. It was my deepest, horrible fear that I would become a recognizable figure.
Yes.
Those people, for one thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly. Oh,
yes. That was that's the double-edged sword of what we do. And you've said it twice, and I wanted to point that out, is I don't think people recognize how much we, or any artist, I don't think any artist wants to get on stage. We don't want to do that, but we have to do that.
Yeah.
And we got to push ourselves to do that. And it's terrifying even to most people that are on stage. It's not like we're just, hey, yeah, get me up there in front of a multitude of people. And then especially, hey, get me up there and let me change the world. That's scary shit.
It is. It's very. And, you know, I always felt like I got to really, it's not enough for me to repeat things or sort of have a vague idea or just be kind of inspired by something. I've always been like, no, I really need to nail this down. Right. I need to be like absolutely clear before I put anything definitively out, because I'm not trying to bullshit people. You know, I grew up surrounded by cults and all of the consciousness movement and all the new age stuff and the Hollywood version of that and all of this stuff. And I was like very confused by a lot of it. And I took a long time to examine it and to try to kind of sort it out and understand, because I'm not interested in just kind of demonizing or heroizing anything, because I feel like that erases the reality and is very dangerous. And so kind of really getting to a point where I'm like, okay, no, I actually do understand what's going on. I understand what this whole guru trip is. I understand how these cults affect people's minds. I understand why they do what they do. I understand why people are attracted to them. And it's like, not at all I want to do. My whole goal in life has been figuring that out so I can make sure that I don't end up in that one way or the other. That's like the whole really has been like, I don't want to be a cult leader. I don't want to be a cult follower. I want the third option. You know, what's the third option? How do we not do that? And again, this is that's patriarchy. You know, that's a hierarchical system. And you know, sometimes occasionally they are, you know, there's women, but that's, you know, largely a male dominated figure system. And, women kind of participate in that because it's the only format that exists. Right. You know, that's just the only format we're grown up looking at. And so we look at men and we imitate men because we don't have role models for other systems. Right. And so a lot of what I've done is look for other systems and look for role models and templates and proof that people have done things differently. Because in the patriarchal system, they tell you there is no other system, that this is it. And they erase any history that would prove otherwise. So I've gone looking for those erased history. And when I was younger, you know, it was not so easy to find them. You had to literally go walk
right.
on the street and meet people. Now the activism, you know, from indigenous communities online, people have access to information that I had to really do, you know, I had to go down some very different roads as a young person to gain access to the kind of wisdom that people are really being handed now, which is amazing. But people should understand just how deep this is. This is generations of people, you know, passing, holding this knowledge and holding this space so that we can benefit from it now. So
absolutely. I'm so glad that the volume has been turned up on certain things like patriarchy, as far as how deep of a rabbit hole that is, the word, you know, white privilege, all that. It's a little louder now, and that's really good, and that it's so out there, because even though it feels sometimes like we're being trampled on, it's out there. The voice is there, and I think it's better than it was.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I remember when growing up, I heard this story a lot, and I don't know how verifiable it is. But, you know, when I was growing up, it was all World War II, you know, Vietnam, too. But, you know, World War II was very big as I growing up as a kid in the 80s. You know, this was very recent history. This was defining the 20th century. And so it was the Nazis and all of that, which I found very disturbing. And which you should, but yes. I'm just saying it definitely loomed large in my consciousness as a child. And it was something that I didn't want to have to deal with. I definitely wanted to, you know, avoid that story to some degree, aware of it. And yet, you know, so it's really interesting seeing how things have gone. But there was this narrative that said that when they asked Gandhi why he existed, and he replied that he existed because Hitler existed, that's the nature of the universe, you know, that you have these great heroes because you have great evil, that if there wasn't these different powers, you know, and I think he wasn't really speaking so personally, it was more of a metaphor, but, you know, that there's, you know, it's out of necessity, you know, and I think that's part of where I've been very anti-hero. I'm like, as long as we hero worship, we're demon worshiping, because you don't have that type of hero without that type of evil.
Right.
And so I feel like we have to let go of our attachment to all this attachment to the hero is really an attachment to the darkness. And that, that we have to let go of this idea that somebody's going to save us, this whole savior deal, that somebody's going to die for our sins. Like, dude, it's, you know, sorry, guys, but that's not what it's about. That's a whole other deal. That's not what any of it was ever about.
Unfortunately, it's going to come down to all of us, which is very uncomfortable.
Yeah, exactly. No, we're not children. Nobody's going to save us. We have to do it. We have to do it ourselves. And this method of communication that we have is having that impact. And, you know, so stop looking for your Gandhi to the Hitler. You know, no, there is no such thing. Trump is not even the evil. Trump represents, he's just a convenient representation, illustration of it. You know, this is about, and that's what my whole concept for the Seraphim Rising was, for my rock band. It was always this idea of what kind of, it was a revolution, you know, an angelic revolution, basically, where people were able finally to hear the truth of reality. you know, to have that communication and to be awoken, and that they would save the world from destruction. And I mean, if a Trump, exactly, a figure just like Trump, was totally the narrative of my story that we were creating back in 2008, you know, for, was the inspiration for that whole album, was this concept that we were going to fight this, there was this revolution that was going to happen. And we were telling it in the past tense. My band thought I was nuts, by the way. They had a hard time getting their head around this. But I was like, no, it's this revolution. And like, I remember my guitarist, he was like, I don't really understand what the Seraphim Rising is. And I'm like, well, it's revolution that is going to happen, that will have happened, right, called the Seraphim Rising. And it will become known as the Seraphim Rising. And it's a revolution. And this is, it's a revolution of consciousness that the people will have so that they can fight this character. We called him the Lord Prophet, who come and corrupted everything. And, you know, was built on the history of patriarchy. And that essentially, you know, the powers of the divine in the universe were going to intervene, because it had gotten that bad that we couldn't just be left to our own devices. We really did need a divine intervention. And so the angels, which are just a conduit for the source, essentially, decided, normally do not take action. Normally they just communicate the information. You know, we're here, this is the source, this is the living creation, and we're communicating that, and you know, humans are on their own. And even the communicators got fed up and decided, okay, we're really gonna have to take some action here, because they're not getting it. And so that was my story. The Seraphim Rising was that the angels, you know, ramped it up a bit and said, okay, you know, the crisis is bad enough that if we don't bring this back into alignment, it's really going to just spiral totally out of control. And so, you know, 10 years later, maybe it's
coming to pass. Yes.
Yeah, you know, maybe it's just where we're at in this particular time, in this timeline. It's just what's happening. So some of us are just notice it. Right. That's all.
And that's good. Well, I think we are needed to be noticing it so others can notice it as well.
Exactly. Hey, look at that shit.
Look at all this shit, man.
But we have to, you know, we have to have joy. We really do. We have to, as horrible as it is, what, you know, that's community. That's why we have community. We have to have community that we can be ourselves with so that we can have joy and keep going. Otherwise we won't make it.
I love that. Know? And you're certainly working on that community with Patreon. Yes. Your next, other than your poster that you need to make, and those beautiful shirts that I love those shirts, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Those are awesome. I always love that design. What's your next like Patreon accomplishment that you're working towards?
Oh, yes. This is very exciting. This is kind of a big deal.
Yes.
But don't get big expectations. It's a big deal, but it's also a humble goal.
We'll keep our expectations low.
But when I talked with you last, I had performed at the Desert Stars Music Festival in Joshua Tree, or I was going to perform there. Mm-hmm. And that was a deal because I was playing a music festival and it was my launch of my first solo single and my identity as Atta Selena. And, you know, that was fantastic, and I was hoping to move on to bigger and better gigs and record my album. And then instead I had to face the death of my godmother and several other deaths and become physically disabled and go on this whole journey we've been talking about. So I've hardly performed since then. In the last 5 years, I've performed, you know, extremely minimally, very little. And I have also even let go of my whole plan and idea only to have it come back around and still be what I'm doing. And so in spite of this huge lapse, the vision that I had and the reasons I was doing things are kind of more real now than they were. And through Patreon, I've been in support for my family. I've been able to set up a little home studio, and I've got a keyboard and a microphone and a computer, which is apparently all you need these days.
Yeah. You need less and less as we go forward.
And so my goal is to start doing some performing, some rehearsal. I'm kind of calling it rehearsal performances from my studio, which is what I need to do to get back to work on this record that I'm making. And I'm going to be filming that and doing some musical recordings and putting them up for my Patreon subscribers. So you'll be my audience. Fantastic. And get to experience kind of how I start. With my recording. So I've written songs. Some of them are complete. Some of them are partially complete. And I do a lot of improvising. So my idea is to kind of invite you into the stage where it's not fully rehearsed. It's not my performance version. It's kind of what I do when I'm just by myself and I'm working on these songs. So anyway, that's
love that.
That's coming at you.
Very exciting, and I look forward to seeing that. And once you plug yourself into New Mexico, I think it'll be like an explosion of creativity.
I do too. Yeah, that's been on my bucket list. Okay. I've wanted to live there since I was a kid. So
it's the cosmic thing. You'll just tune right into all of those channels, and it'll be rapturous.
Yeah, and I will be. I think I will be. You know, if you look at the geography, like, it's the heart. Yes, right there. Yes. Like, it's the center of the heart of this whole country. Yeah, and sure. The land there is amazing. Like, and literally, if you look at a topographical map, it looks like where I'm moving is right the middle of a literal heart, you know, yeah, of the country. And it also physically is, you know, I'm up here in Northern California. I can't get anywhere. Right. It takes forever. Like, it's like, again, crossing the desert, and it's so hard to get anywhere. So I'm very excited to be physically there. Just like, I feel like I can actually get to places and get out into the world again. And then also, kind of just what New Mexico is, and so much art culture and music culture, and so many people coming there from all over the world. And
I think their slogan is the land of enchantment.
Yes, yeah. It is.
There
it is.
Just go with that. There you go.
The light, yeah, the light in New Mexico is no other. So I'm chasing the light.
Fantastic. And so we can find you on Twitter, Patreon. It's all @Aselina.
It is. It's all @Aselina now. Yeah, and on Instagram too. I changed some things and then I changed it back. So everything's easy to find again. My website, it's all living and alive now.
It's alive. Well, thank you so much for taking this time to speak with me again.
You're very welcome. Thank you so much for having me. It's been absolutely lovely.
It's good to catch up, and we'll definitely be talking again, and I'll see you on Patreon.
Sounds great. And thank you so much.
Enjoy the rest of your fabulous day.
You too. You are truly fabulous.
Bye.
Bye.
For more of The Artist E, you absolutely must visit theartiste.com. It's fabulous, darling.